You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Just over a year ago, New York Magazine's Daily Intelligencer ran a story by David Wallace Wells entitled The Uninhabitable Earth. It was a litany of apocalyptic worst-case climate change scenarios that sparked an energetic conversation about the value of shock and fear in motivating climate action. Well, a week ago, the New York Times Magazine dedicated its entire issue to one single story entitled Losing Earth. It detailed the early days of climate science and policy and the many missed opportunities to stop or at least minimize the impacts of climate change. Not surprisingly, Jimmy Kimmel has taken a rather different tack in his treatment of climate change, airing an ad designed to convince President Trump of the reality of climate change.
The climate is in crisis. As greenhouse gases accumulate in the atmosphere, the effects can be catastrophic. Scientists say that by 2050, 80% of the world's coastal golf courses could be submerged. Inland, droughts will dry up fairways and make putting greens unputtable.
So humor, fear, facts, emotions, what is the best way to talk about climate change? Megan Mackesy is a doctoral candidate at the University of Utah and winner of the International Association for Media and Communication Research's 2018 Climate Communication Award. She joins me now via Skype. Megan, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about this approach of kind of gloom and doom, pulling out the worst case scenarios and trying to scare people into paying attention to climate change. Does that work?
Yes, I think it's very hard to make one blanket statement across the board. However, for a long time, climate change communication research has really used experimental fear appeals and doom and gloom to test and see if that really does work with audiences. And what we found is that people tend to become overwhelmed and really kind of shut down. So fear is really an avoidance emotion. And it doesn't necessarily lead to motivation. And it can backfire. So often it can lead to increased skepticism if people who are already kind of on the fringe will think that the issue or the effects have been overstated.
Well, that was definitely something that we saw talked about last year with David Wallace Wells' piece, The Uninhabitable Earth. Even scientists saying, you know, you've kind of gone to the edge and maybe a little beyond where we feel comfortable speculating in terms of our projections. And that's not going to be helpful. But at the same time, you know, the other argument is, well, we need to be planning for the worst case scenarios. This is actually really necessary to know just how bad it could get.
Yes, and I completely agree. The facts are always important. You know, people need to get the facts out there and understand them. And really where my research comes at, I study information processing and attitude formation. So how is it that we can all receive the same information, but come away with it with very different understandings and attitudes? And in that line of research, what we really tend to focus on is the two variables of motivation and ability. And so with climate change, it's really an interesting topic for those variables. And we can potentially see why there are some issues because climate change is a very complex topic that can be very difficult for people to understand. And frankly, a lot of people aren't motivated to understand climate change because the effects are typically thought of as unseen or in the distant future. Although, as we've seen in some of this new apocalyptic rhetoric, you know, people are making connections. While the facts, I'm not just saying the facts aren't important, they are, but we need to consider how we package that information to increase people's understanding and motivation.
There was one study that caught my eye a number of years ago. I believe it was researchers, I can't remember now if it was Stanford or Berkeley, but they said basically the apocalyptic vision can work if it is then paired with a message of empowerment, of providing people with some options for how to respond to that. So it can be motivating, but only if you kind of show people the way that they might put that into action. Has that been borne out by other studies?
Yes, definitely. I think that is spot on because we talk a lot about self-efficacy. And so we want to be able to leave people with the notion that they can do something. We don't want to discredit either the issue of climate change or the individual role. And so I think there has been a lot of research into how we can tackle that, how we can break down that climate change is this big, scary issue and present people with some tangible actions that they can take that aren't going to feel, like too small. People are smart. You know, they're not going to be like, well, if I turn off a couple of extra light bulbs or change them to LED, we're going to solve climate change. But if you can talk to them about the influence of travel or of the food choices that they make and how these things can add up over time, they start realizing that they can play a role.
For a long time, I think scientists in particular, but a lot of people concerned about climate change tried to stick to the facts and said, if we give people the information, then they'll understand how important this issue is and something will happen. And they really shied away from emotional or moral cases for climate action. Mm-hmm. What do we know about that choice and how important, I guess, on the flip side of that, emotional or moral pleas can be?
So, yes, again, facts are important, and that's where scientists are coming from, and they're proud of the research that they've done. But how we portray them, if we tie in emotions, they can actually work together. Again, emotions can be a variable in the way that we process this information.
What do you mean by that?
So it can inhibit or increase our ability and motivation. So as I mentioned before, fear appeals have long been known as an avoidance emotion. They cause us to shut down and not take action, which is not what we need when it comes to climate change. Meanwhile, hope is considered an approach emotion, which can lead to more action. And currently, I'm actually researching anger with my dissertation, which has some more conflicting findings, and which I think is kind of interesting and relevant to climate change communication, because as we see, some people, you know, it's a very personal issue when people make these connections. And so anger is interesting in that it can make people very hot-headed and lead to impulsive decisions. And so, you know, we've seen that if you look at a social media post that you may not agree with and respond right away. It may not be the most eloquent response. You know, you really haven't processed that information. You're just responding very, very quickly. However, other studies have shown that anger can actually lead people to more buy-in, where you really want to right a wrong, right an injustice.
The anger or at least injustice element seems like it could be particularly important when addressing climate change, and particularly at this point in addressing climate change, because we're already seeing the effects. And especially for young people, there is a growing sense of anger, even betrayal, that we've gotten to this point without more action. It seems like that could be a real in, and maybe that also is already playing out in some of the youth activism that we're seeing around climate change today.
Yes, I think that's a great point. I think the upcoming generation is frankly angry. And that New York Times piece, I mean, I got angry reading that.
So we can shape what we print in the media. I mean, the media is one of the main ways that people are encountering this, but we can't necessarily influence how people take that in and what media they're getting. So how important are media consumption patterns in figuring out how to talk about and actually have a conversation about climate change?
Oh, media plays such an important role in all of this. You know, 2/3 of Americans are concerned about human-caused climate change, but the media will actually have us believe something differently. And in the United States, we have this long history of the balanced perspective in the media. So, you know, giving airtime to both sides of an issue, no matter how, say, science may portray it. You see this with climate change, where scientists are saying, you know, over 97% of us say that humans are a cause of climate change. But media reporting will give a different representation of that. And so in agenda setting research, we actually find that the importance that the media place on topics will directly reflect the importance that the public place on it.
And do you think that the media has placed an appropriate attention on climate change to date?
It should be covered more. I believe it should be covered more. And, you know, when we talk about where we're getting our media from, I mean, this is a growing issue. We have this interactive media environment where we get to choose who we talk to and what news we listen to. And we really start to exist in these echo chambers where we're only really talking to or hearing news that is similar to what we believe in.
Is there any research showing a way out of or around or through these bubbles that we all seem to be living in now?
There have been quite a few studies that have emphasized the importance of opening yourself up to many media sources. And there's also this call for a return for greater interpersonal communication. You know, we should embrace face-to-face conversations. And we see time and time again that people value the beliefs of their family and friends. And you hear all the time that, you know, people don't want to have that awkward climate change conversation with their uncle at Thanksgiving. But if we don't have those conversations, then we perpetuate the notion that everyone around us thinks the same way. In cognitive dissonance theory, it really tells us that being confronted with beliefs or ideas we don't share makes us feel uncomfortable, which makes sense. So we try to distance ourselves from it. But I would encourage everyone, you know, don't turn away from that awkward conversation, engage in it, but remember to be respectful. Asking a person about their beliefs, you know, acknowledging that their opinion is heard, and finding some way to have common ground for your conversation. And then when you talk, trying to stick to the facts that you know and not overload the person, because that can then lead to someone shutting down.
That's Megan Macasey. She's a doctoral candidate at the University of Utah and winner of the International Association for Media and Communication Research's 2018 Climate Communication Award. She joined me via Skype. Megan, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Up next, what computers can teach us about religion. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.